Hello and welcome to Talk Gnosis, the web's premier video show slash podcast, going on more than 8 years, covering Gnosticism, the esoteric, the occult, magic, mysticism, and whatever else we feel like talking about. I'm Deacon Jonathan Stewart. Joining me in the co-hosting duties, equally hosting, amazing hosting, we've got Bishop Lainey Peterson.
How you doing?
Good. How are you? Someday I'm going to write an intro and actually do it, but
Hey, it's best to be spontaneous between friends here.
Yes, precisely. Precisely. And we've got a fantastic and amazing show for you today with a topic that that I find personally very exciting, very engaging, something that we've touched on before with other creatives, and this might be a new Talk Gnosis mini-series, but we're talking to artist Kat Luneau. Hi, Kat.
Hello.
Hi, Kat.
So we're going to be speaking to Kat about the intersection of art and mysticism and the esoteric. And at the latter half of the show, we are going to be looking at some of her art together. So if you're listening to this in podcast form, you may want to check out the YouTube version. Or, I don't know, I will put links to her art in the show notes, and you can just keep the audio on and open them up and take a look. So we'll jump right into it, Kat. What drew you to painting and art, and how did you get started?
So a lot of my family are artists or musicians or just, you know, creative types in general. So I think it's just in my DNA. And I think for a long time when I was younger, I was trying to do other things because art as a career is generally not considered very, maybe very stable, or it can be. I mean, there are plenty of people who make a good living with art. So I learned eventually that the stereotype is not really the case. But that being said, I tried to do other things, and eventually I can't not do the art. I just wanted to learn how to draw. I was kind of envious of all the people around me who knew how to draw and paint well. And so eventually, not until 2003 is when I went to art school. And once I started art school and started learning the skills, that kind of got the ball rolling.
Okay, very cool. And how did you get into the esoteric? And then kind of the second part of this question, that's sort of a question all of its own. But how did you get into the esoteric? And then part two, how did you start exploring esoteric themes in your work?
Right. So the esoteric, I had to think about that one. How did I get into the esoteric? But I think what it is, I remember as a very little kid, and I think even when I think back to myself, like 4 or 5 years old, I always thought, this is so weird that anything exists. Like, why do I exist? Why does anyone exist? Why does anything exist the way that it does? I don't know how common that is or not, but I know it's something that sort of occurred to me a lot, right? So along with that constant question in the back of my mind came an interest in anything that endeavored to answer that question. So that came to include the esoteric and magic and mysticism. But I mean, in the beginning, when I was a kid, I was into parapsychology, and like I liked philosophy and quantum physics as subjects when I was in school, and world religions, spiritual systems, just anything that touches on trying to answer that question is what is something that I've always felt drawn to. There is a point at which those two things intersected, the art and the esotericism. And that was when, I think this was a year 2000, so it was exactly 20 years ago, a friend of mine sent me a Thoth tarot deck. I don't know if it needs any introduction with your audience.
No, I don't think so.
Right. And I was really fascinated with, you know, with Lady Frieda Harris art on mm-hmm. there. And of course that made me want to learn the symbolism behind it. I hadn't really encountered like formal esotericism before that. It was more that I saw the tarot deck and I saw there was like Hebrew letters and, you know, all of this kind of stuff on it. And that's when I fell down the rabbit hole. And eventually, so that got me into esotericism proper. And eventually, after that, I went to art school and started painting. And so they were kind of separate for a while. And then it just intertwined organically because I paint what I'm interested in. And I like to paint on lots of different subjects, but that's one of my big interests. So naturally, it's going to go there.
Ah, extremely awesome. Yeah, I think, Lainey, you were commenting how so many people we talk to have childhood stories like that, right? Of just their interest in the esoteric sort of begins when they're children. I find that that's a very interesting connecting thread with a lot of guests that we talk about. And
a lot of it. When I was growing up, I was interested in fortune telling, ESP. I would read, you know, fiction books. Lois Duncan was a writer that I read a lot as a youngster. She was a popular children's young adult author who often focused on paranormal themes, largely because they sold. But that was, I think, that was something that I think it was definitely there. Also with the tarot deck.
Yeah.
Tarot decks oftentimes have that connection. Now, one of the things I find fascinating about the three most famous of the Golden Dawn inspired decks, which were, of course, the Rider-Waite, the Thoth, and the Boda deck, is that they were led, you know, that they were conceived of by men, A.E. Waite, and Aleister Crowley and Paul Foster Case. But in each case, it was a woman who was the artist.
I always thought that was a pretty curious thing as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I found it fascinating, and it, given the impact of those decks, and of course the fact that all three of the men had connections with the Golden Dawn. So,
yeah, it's pretty infuriating, and I think that's kind of fixed now. But for, you know, almost 100 years or decades and decades, the Rider-Waite deck was called the Rider-Waite deck instead of the Smith-Waite deck, as it should be called. But I think these are some awesome artistic genius women who are finally getting the notice that they deserve.
Yeah, I think also people that who don't actually do the drawing have no idea how difficult that is.
Yeah.
It's easier to come up with the idea than it is to depict it.
Oh, yeah, 100%. But I think you're right. You know, it's good that we have an artist backing up something that I have suspected.
Yeah.
So, Kat, on your website, you mentioned Carl Jung. Well, what is the importance of the work of Jung both to you personally and to your art?
Yeah, that's a big question. Let me just scroll down my... Okay, I just wanted to look at my note real quick to make sure I remember what I wanted to say about it. Jung is kind of a later development of my interest. I've always liked psychology, and I actually have a degree in psychology, but colleges don't cover Jung.
Very unfashionable.
He's a little bit fringe, I suppose, but in the last few years, since I kind of gotten into Jung's work, his work ends up kind of connecting a lot of threads for me. And I find that his work is useful not only in art, but just in as connecting all the threads of esotericism and just life in general. And I'll try to explain the reason why. I've never tried to explain this out loud before, so I'm kind of working my way through it. But what I've kind of discovered in exploring Jungian psychology is that it seems to me that the unconscious underlies a lot more of our thoughts and feelings and actions than we suspect or than we want to believe, right? We like to think we're in control and everything we're reacting to and doing and thinking and feeling is under our control. And I'm believing that it's mostly not. And most of our reactions come from completely unconscious impulses. And so I have found Jungian techniques, like working with dreams and active imagination and things like that, very invaluable mm-hmm. to discovering my own impulses and motivations and where this feeling or that feeling is coming from, why I'm reacting this way or that way. And if one of the ultimate missions of esoteric study is to know thyself, which I believe it is, then I think it's imperative to know one's unconscious.
Yeah.
And I've found that Jung's work, it just works for me. I mean, I think there are many systems to explore one's unconscious, but Jung's system really works for me. And I've also come to kind of believe that creativity in general, whether it's visual art or music or anything, creativity is also a way to bring material out from the unconscious and to manifest it through your own conscious filter.
Yes.
And so in working with my own unconscious, I've been able to like get through, like I don't even have creative blocks anymore, right? A lot of people like will talk about writer's block or creative blocks. Like once you get comfortable and you get into a habit of relating constantly to your unconscious, it doesn't, then there's no block. So I think it's very valuable. Working with the unconscious is very valuable for anyone who does creative work, because that's where the material kind of originates from, I think.
I have a question about this. And you said that you know, when you work with that, you lose the block. Do you think then the block in the creative process is an impasse because there's a disconnect or a miscommunication, or that the unconscious feels ignored? Do you have any insight on that?
I think, yeah, I do have a thought about that. I think it's the conscious mind getting in the way. So okay. I think that the conscious mind is much, much louder than the unconscious. The unconscious is whispering. And as long as you have a running reel of speech in your mind, of self-talking, that's your conscious mind constantly talking over your unconscious. And you just can't hear it. Like you can't, and so a lot of times what happens, even if someone gets an intuition, like if I have like some kind of creative impulse or any other impulse, immediately the analytical mind wants to give a reason to it or explain it or do something with it and rationalize it or whatever it wants to do, and that shuts off the unconscious immediately. Yeah.
Interesting.
So a lot of it is also not only I got to add, it's not just the Jungian work, but what also is really valuable for this is simply meditation, because when you calm your conscious mind, that allows the unconscious to come through some more. So a lot of this is really also about toning down your conscious mind, so it's not talking over your unconscious all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had some of that in my personal experience. I almost think of it as making space. It almost feels like, I know it's a metaphor because I'm not scooping out parts of my brain. But
not yet, anyways.
Not yet. I mean, the way the world is going, I might see if I can request that. I don't know if they'll do that for free in Canada. I can go to the doctor and just be like, take out that lobe. But... Yeah. You know, when you meditate, for people who meditate a lot, they often have this experience of just having a sense of spaciousness, and sometimes, not all people, but the internal dialogue, it kind of slows down a bit in a pleasant way.
Mm-hmm.
I've sort of personally have experienced a little bit of what you're talking about, and I think other people have as well. And you know, I often do recommend meditation to people who are creatives and perhaps are blocked or looking for some inspiration. And David Lynch actually has an excellent book on the topic.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention that. That was actually where it's funny you mentioned that. Before, so this idea about creativity and the unconscious, I got that originally from David Lynch. Like before I got into the Jungian stuff, I read David Lynch's book at some point because I love David Lynch and I really admire his creativity. And so that's where that idea first came, you know, but I think at the time I didn't know how meditation and creativity were related. Like he does a good job of making the case for it, but he doesn't really give you instructions like, you know, how to make that happen. So,
yeah. Well, hopefully he'll come on the show next week. So we'll ask him all about it. I'll do my best, Lainey. I'll do my best to book him. Or if anybody Excellent. Out there knows how to get in touch with David Lynch, please hook us up. So, Kat, So, in general, we're kind of talking about more general links, not just about esoteric art, but sort of art and creativity in general, and creating room for the subconscious and exploring the subconscious. But do you see any connections between the esoteric and art, like, period, even if the art isn't explicitly esoteric?
So that's something that has changed in my mind over the years. So when I was doing art and doing the esoteric separately, in the beginning, I used to compartmentalize them. And I thought, well, if I'm, you know, I'm either doing like esoteric art or spiritual art, or I'm doing like regular art. And over the years, that distinction is completely blurred. I don't compartmentalize them anymore, which has actually led me to do a lot of non-esoteric art a lot more, because I find a lot of value in, so how do I put this? So if esoteric art is about exploring the spiritual or the non-material with art, then let's see. Then esoteric art is probably a good gateway to it, because it's very obvious, because that's what it's about. But if the goal is to understand or explore what is behind our material reality, then it then becomes a much better exercise to find it in everything else. And so even if you're looking at the most quote unquote mundane piece of art, there's going to be like a spiritual origination from it, and it's not going to be obvious, like it is with an explicitly esoteric subject, but it's going to be there because it came from the same unconscious pool as everything else.
Right.
And so I've actually found it much more interesting to approach it that way at this point. If that makes any sense. I don't know if it makes
sense. No, it does. It does very much so. Yeah. Now, if people are, they are esotericists or occultists, they're doing their rituals, they're doing their meditation, is there a way that they can use art in their esoteric practice?
Like, do you mean looking at art or doing art?
Let's start with looking with art, and then we can talk, and then I'll ask about doing art.
That is a really good, oh man. I have to think about how to. I have many thoughts. I have many thoughts on this, many ideas about it. I'm trying to coalesce some of them into something that makes sense. I think looking at art. So there's actually a book that I read fairly recently. That's not an esoteric book, but it almost kind of. Whether you're making art or looking at art, it almost kind of answers the question better than I can. Have you heard of the book called The Art Spirit by Robert Henry?
No, The Art Spirit by Robert Henry.
The Art Spirit. Okay.
The Art Spirit by Robert Henry, H-E-N-R-I.
Okay.
It reads a little bit dated because it's from the 20s. And it's not an esoteric book, and it's written from the perspective of a painter. He was a painter. But it's like a spiritual treatise on art. And when I first went to art school, I discovered that you're not just learning to draw and paint. You're learning how to see. Mm-hmm. You're learning how to see things in a much more careful and intentional way than when you normally look at things. And I think that in doing esoteric work, you're kind of doing the same thing. You're trying to
see, yeah.
How do things exist? How do they look to you? How are you processing it? How is the material world assembled? Even some of the esoteric systems, like the Golden Dawn, has like all of these color correspondences and all of these things in the Golden Dawn kind of allude to that. Like, what is, like, different colors have different effects on you. They have different effects on your emotions. Marketing makes use of this, like using design and color to impact you and in ways that you don't consciously notice. And so I think, whatever kind of esoteric work you're doing, you can look at art or you can just look at things around you and just observe it. Like, what is the light and shadow doing? How is that affecting your consciousness? What is the color doing? It's almost like a meditation of whatever you're looking at, whatever, what kind of impact is this visual assembly having on your consciousness?
You know, I've been to the shows and concerts and whatnot, where I've been with people who have been trained in the art, usually either because they're professional musicians or singers, and I'll be listening and whatever, but the people who I'm with, they're going to be hearing entirely different things. And they're going to be noticing different things because of, oh, this thing called discipline and practice. When you practice and you're in that industry and you repeatedly engage with it, suddenly you do learn how to hear or see things differently. And we often talk about on this show the importance of spiritual practice. Yeah. That when you practice spiritually, you will learn to hear and see and observe things differently as well. So there's a... It seems to me that there's quite a connection here.
A correlation there, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Kat, and I'm going to put a little asterisk or put these in brackets, if anything, because perhaps it's just for the sake of art, but what, if anything, are you trying to achieve with your art?
I would say I would put what I'm trying to achieve in two categories. The subjective and the objective. So subjectively, I'm exploring my unconscious and trying to see what it looks like consciously. And I'm trying to make a connection with my subject. And yeah. Objectively, I'm trying to communicate. It's visual communication. When someone writes a story, they're trying to communicate their ideas to the reader in a way that will connect with the reader. So I'm trying to do the same thing I'm trying to do the same thing with ideas that can't be communicated verbally. They can only be communicated visually. And that latter part is very important, because if no one connects with what I'm depicting, then I'm just talking into a void. There's almost no purpose.
Exactly. Do you have an example of some other esoteric themed art of any kind? It doesn't have to be painting or visual art, but paintings, movies, music, books, etc., that are esoteric and that you find inspirational or an influence on your own work?
Let me look at my little tiny, I think I made a short little list. It's funny, most of the things I enjoy are not explicitly esoteric. Because again, like we were talking about earlier, I kind of find esoteric things in things that aren't necessarily intended to be that way. But that being said, so I already mentioned the Thought Tarot. And so Tarot art, obviously, as far as esoteric art goes, I absolutely love Tarot art. I love the complete symbolic package that it represents. And I love to see different artists. I love to see it depicted through the filters of different artists. I just find it fascinating how the same symbolism can look so different going through the filters of different people. So love that. And we touched on this already too, but my favorite esoterically themed, again, I guess it's arguable whether it's specifically esoteric and whether it's a movie or not, but season 3 of Twin Peaks. Mm-hmm.
David Lynch.
I think, you know, speaking of Jung, I think David Lynch is a master at creating art out of the shadow.
Yeah.
So really anything by David Lynch, but I thought season 3 of Twin Peaks was absolutely phenomenal.
We really just need to do a show about Twin Peaks sometime. And David Lynch did say that season 3 is one big long movie. And he actually shot it and wrote it as a movie, not as episodes, and chopped it up later. So I think that definitely counts. When I talk to people about the question, is David Lynch esoteric? I think the answer is yes, because of that, those Jungian archetypes, the unconscious bubbling forth. But specifically of Twin Peaks, he worked with a co-writer, Mark Frost.
Apparently, Mark Frost actually had an explicit interest in these subjects. So it's
precisely. So yeah. He works it in and kind of, I think, shapes some of the esoteric ideas that are naturally bubbling out of David Lynch. So I think that definitely counts.
Yeah. I've read like some fascinating essays that people have written on the alchemy in Twin Peaks.
Oh, wow. You have to forward those to me. Maybe I can put them in the show notes. The show notes I always mention when we're recording a show and never remember to do, but I will. Maybe this will be the time I do them, and I'll be linking over to your website, and everybody buy a print from Kat. But we'll get to that. Get to that at the end of the show.
I got to find where it's bookmarked, but it's definitely bookmarked, and I can message you that later, for sure.
Thank you. So a question that I think both Lainey and I are very interested in, obviously we're interested in all the questions and answers, but...
We are interested in all the things.
Right now, like, we don't know when people are watching, listening to this. You know, some of the loyal Talk Gnosis people, they watch it right away. Our patrons actually get the show early. It's a great reason to sign up for the Patreon. But of course, some people, you know, they watch, they binge, or they wait, or they find the show further in the future. So we never know what's going to be happening when they when they're watching, listening to the show. But right now, the world's pretty messed up. And for all I know,
it's going to stop being messed up. I think if they're listening to this 10 years later, it'll be messed up. Maybe in a different way, but it'll.
I think you're right. I think there's a good chance if you're listening or watching this in the future, it's in your bunker. You know, before you had to go down into your bunker, downloaded all the Talk Gnosis episodes. So thank you for doing that.
And right now we're above ground. This is an above ground episode of Talk Gnosis.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's not even a single mutant eating anybody on the street. So that's what the world was like a year ago. Person watches in the future, but okay, the world is messed up. Do you see a role for art and or the esoteric in sort of addressing this and healing the world, or do you think like art and the esoteric should exist for their own sake?
So I have a lot of thoughts on this, because similar questions get asked so many times. Stop me if I go on too long, because it could So questions similar to this get asked a lot. So implicit, so I don't know that this is probably not exactly what you're asking, but implicit in a question like this is often the implication that perhaps art is optional or not as important as, like, you know, doing medicine or doing social justice or whatever people are thinking at the moment is really, really important. Art always comes up as this thing like, oh, it's a luxury thing. It's not that. And I think it's a terrible, I mean, not only is this a cultural, this is kind of culturally defined, because not all cultures put it on such a low, you know, tier. But it's also bad for the artists, because I see a lot of artists like questioning, like when the COVID thing started and all of this and the, you know, the social justice things, they're like, well, I'm just sitting here making pictures. Should I be doing something more important? You know, and it's terrible, you know, it's terrible on their mind, you know, on their creative mindset. But I think that this is like a false question and it presents a false dichotomy. And usually my first answer, even my first answer to myself, to a question like this is just try this thought experiment, right? When I talk about art, I'm talking about creativity as a whole, because visual art is just one mode of expression. So to me, they're all under one umbrella. So imagine a world, not just like without art, like museums and galleries, but without movies, without novels, no Netflix, no interesting architecture. All the buildings are just like communist style concrete blocks, right? No beautiful buildings, no stories, no music. Would you still want to live in that world? Would you still feel inspired to heal and to you know, create justice and to even go on? I mean, there'd still be nature to enjoy, but is that enough? Could you live in a world like that? I know the answer for myself. I couldn't. I think I would be terribly, terribly depressed. I think it would be hard to find a reason to go on living if I couldn't enjoy all the fruits of everyone else's creativity. So I think basically my conclusion to that is creativity is a human drive. It exists just like sexuality or love or anything else. It's just basic to human. So it's not should it exist for itself, or I mean, all of these drives exist, and they exist in themselves, and people also assign them roles, right? So if I use sexuality as an analogy, like it exists, and for some people, it's for reproduction. For other people, some people aren't into it. Some people are asexual. Other people, it exists purely for pleasure. For other people, it's power or it's intimate connection, or people assign it different roles depending on who they are. And so I would say the same thing for art. It exists because it's a human drive. And some people just want to make something beautiful. Other people want to use it for social causes, like people make political cartoons or you know, whatever they're doing for that, or you know, some people, for some people it does seem to be healing. I don't really necessarily have any of those intentions when I make a picture. I have my own reasons, but I've had people message me like, who clearly were affected in a positive way by, you know, I'm just thinking I'm painting a picture, but I've had people message me with, like, I had no idea it affected anyone that way. Like, it's great. So
yeah,
you never know. Yeah. You never know. You make something creative for whatever your own reasons are, and you never know how it's going to affect someone else.
Absolutely. You know, it was funny when we had another artist, visual artist on a few episodes back, Alex Coma, and we were looking at some of his artwork, which we'll be doing in a second here. But, interesting thing for me was that, you know, I was making observations and he said, you know, I didn't even notice that myself. You know, it was something that he'd put into his art and it was being observed very differently. And again, I'm a theater correspondent for a radio show. I have been to plays with friends and we're both very affected by the play, but for very different reasons. You know, my friend took something out of this differently than what I took out of this, and that neither may have been what the director or the writer was going for.
Exactly. And yeah, and if we're talking about like healing and stuff, like art for healing, it just even just occurs to me, there are some forms of media that some people will consider just escapist entertainment, let's say. You know, they don't think there's any depth behind it, but those same like TV shows or movies, like I've seen some people will say that it got them through a very difficult,
very rough time,
a depression. Yeah. Like sometimes all you need, you know, sometimes all you need is like 2 hours of escapism and it resets your mind. And so there's like a really important role for even these things that some people will kind of devalue and judge as superficial.
Exactly. And they will also develop their own communities. I mean, there will be these fan communities that start up. They have fan fiction. They have fan art. So clearly there's something grabbing at some of these people's psyches, and they're going on to have their own creative process in response, even if it is what seems to be very plebeian. It's clearly
exactly people. That. And I wish that would just, that message would get out more because people, if someone is feeling like a creative drive, like they shouldn't feel guilted into doing something else with it than what their true motivation is. Like the motivation should be pure. It should be your internal motivation, and it shouldn't be like what society says is, well, you should be doing this because it's superficial if it's not that, you know, I don't know. No one should be guilted into not doing what they, you know, what their true spiritual motivation is kind of telling them.
Yeah. Amen, Kat. I think we can all agree of that. And circling back to the first thing you said, where sort of, you know, with the present crises and some people looking at as art as frivolous and, oh, you got to be doing something more serious because of COVID or whatever. But just exactly what you were saying, like, how could we have gotten through quarantine without books, movies, music, television, which are all creative, right? Like, I think most of us would have lost our minds.
And then if quarantine
happens again, like, what is it that people are going to turn to, right? It's going to be Netflix, which is made by creatives. Yep. It's going to be books. It's going to be music. It's going to be movies. So the fact that a lot of people out there are asking, you know, what is the value of art? We're literally, you know, kept us from going completely insane. It boggles my mind. So
you're asking what is the value of art and then watching Netflix in the next moment. It's like a total disconnect.
Yes, exactly. Well, so we've enough of the sizzle. It's time for the steak. We'll
the culinary arts. There you go.
Yeah. I'll rap three times. I'll make a pentagram. I'll summon our producer, Jerome, who's going to bring up some art. Jerome, if you could bring up Kat's piece, Memento Mori.
There it is. I love this one. I love the colors on this, for one thing.
Oh, thank you.
So Kat, if you could just tell us a little bit about it. And some people out there, they're going to be familiar with the phrase memento mori, and some of our audience is not. They've probably never heard it before. So if you could talk a little bit about the title, a little bit about the piece, shoot.
I'll try. I should have come better prepared for this. It's weird. I never talk, well, this is a little bit of an aside. I never actually talk about my work. I just kind of finish it and then move on to the next thing. And then when someone asks me about it, I have to like, wait, what what was I thinking? But I'll do my best. So Memento Mori was, now correct me if I'm forgetting now, but there's a lot of art. I think it comes from the Middle Ages. There was a lot of art in the medieval era that featured the Grim Reaper and things like this. I guess, well, I don't really, I'm not a historian. I don't really know the history, but it's something like this. There was a lot of, there was a lot of death themed, like Hieronymus Bosch type stuff going on. And it was probably influenced by the Black Plague. And that's about all I know of the history, but even to that extent, I've always been kind of fascinated with it because I think, I think it's pretty well known that as a society, probably most societies, we have a very unhealthy relationship with death, which is a shame because death is as common as birth, of course, for obvious reasons. And
one way or the other,
one way or the other, if you're here, you're going to die. If you do nothing else in your life, you're going to die. So I think somehow we need to improve our relationship with death because it is inevitable. But it's never, you know, most of what people try to do is escape it or prolong it or avoid it or otherwise kind of get it out of their minds. But they're just prolonging the inevitable. And so what I sort of enjoy about this kind of art is that it lightens the mood on it. I think it's a little bit easier to deal with it psychologically if you kind of try to get yourself to not be so damn serious about it. Like maybe it's okay. Maybe you'll die and everything will be awesome. Like you'll see all your loved ones that you lost. We don't know. We don't really know what happens afterwards, so why not kind of lighten the mood about it a little bit and think maybe it's positive, maybe it's a good change. And so that's kind of why I like thinking about that. I like painting skulls and drawing skulls and skeletons, and because they sort of, it's almost like this is death looking at you and being like, chill, it's not so bad. I don't know. Does that make sense? Something like that.
Yeah.
I love the colors here, which of course have a little bit of a fall quality to them, of course, because it's in the autumn. You start seeing that period of death and decay as we move into winter. But then we've also got Saturn. We've got, you know, Father Time, the notion of time. We've got clocks. We've got hourglasses. And this is really, and we've got that, you know, magnificent scythe there. It's really, but yeah, I said there is a certain amount of fun. I mean, the Reaper here is not depicted necessarily as menacing, but as a man who probably enjoys a good time with that top hat, and all that. And I mean, he's styling. And this is a really, really neat picture. I
like that he's kind of styling too. The Saturn glyphs are my only piece of direct symbolism in there. But you know what's funny? The colors, that was not a conscious choice. I just like the colors. But it's interesting that you saw that in there because you're right. But that was not a conscious decision on my part.
Ah, okay. Well, there.
There you go. And the hourglasses are because for me that's kind of a bit more, even more of a personal aspect of this, is that my anxiety over death is not death itself, but the fact that I'm running out of time. And every time I have a birthday, I think, oh my God, I have so much to do. I have one less year to do it. Yeah. And I feel like this it's almost like breathing down my neck, like do this while I still have time. So that's my personal demon when it comes to death. Is the running out of time.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay, very awesome. Okay, so we'll move on to the next one, which is, forgive me, I'm not a neo-pagan or a pagan or an expert in ancient Greek religion. So
it's not even Neo.
Not even Neo. Is it Hecate? Is that how you say her name? Okay. Hecate, the three in one.
Oh, yeah. So this one was a commission. So the last one I just did because I wanted to, that one was for me. This one was a commission. This one was commissioned by, so Lady, you know Jason Miller.
I do.
So he has a course on like rituals of Hecate, like getting into a ritual practice with Hecate. And one of his students commissioned this. And the symbolism is some symbolism, basically it's from Jason. So I did actually kind of work with Hecate for this piece, but it's not a personal piece for me. And a lot of times the deity pieces are like that for me. They're not, you know, I do make a connection to the deity, but they're based on more on someone else's connection.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm just making the art for them, for their connection. And so a lot of the students doing this course will use this image now for their ritual.
Okay, so they'll get a print of it and they'll put it up when they're doing the Hecate ritual. And you said that even if it's not even if it's a commission, I'm sure it'd be much more authentic than perhaps an artist who doesn't have an esoteric practice. Because as you said, you're actually trying to make a connection to the energy of Hecate.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, relating this back to like sort of viewing everything esoterically, I try to do that with every bit of art, even if it looks mundane. Like I need to make a personal connection. It either has to be like just a communication or an emotional connection, or there has to be intellectual understanding. There's got to be a connection. And so I do make the connection. And that being said, if someone wants to commission me for something with which I really feel no connection and I would have a hard time making that connection, I wouldn't take the commission.
Hell yeah.
Because it really wouldn't be genuine, and it would look like it's not genuine. So I wouldn't do it if I couldn't.
Lainey, any questions or comments on this piece before we move on?
Not in particular. I think we've covered what it's about. I know that course has been very popular in the esoteric and the occult community, and it's interesting to see that this commission has emerged. But it's a fascinating piece.
Yeah, and I should say, like, this isn't the only image. There's other artists who have made their own images of Hecate in this form as well.
Okay.
So a lot of art has emerged from this course. There's a lot of it's a very strong practice for the people who engage in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Next up, we have the brothers.
Oh yeah, that's one of the more you pick the most complicated ones to talk about.
there's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on. So that's another commission. And this symbolism is from so I guess that your audience is probably familiar with Crowley's work.
Probably most of them are ish, but feel free to elaborate and fill in any blanks. You don't have to go through the entire work, and
people
have Wikipedia and Google, right? So
they could do Wikipedia. Yeah, I'm not very good at elevator speeches about esoteric systems.
Yeah.
But the symbolism here is from Crowley's book called The Vision and the Voice.
Okay.
In which he sort of went through the Enochian aethers and recorded his visions, and the symbolism comes from two of the aethers. And what it is that in these visions, he saw another version of the Tyrol lover's card called the Brothers. Mm. And so there's a description in these visions of everything in that vision. And so this was commissioned by a couple of folks who wanted to see like a visual of that, because before it existed only in a verbal form. Yeah, I'm not. If they Google like the vision and the voice and the brothers, they can read about it. My phone just thought that I beckoned it.
Oh,
that happens a lot. It's very irksome.
Said something and it says,
Harry, shut up.
Oh, because I said Google, that's why.
Oh.
I said Google and it said, I found the results.
So weird. Okay, then.
Anyway, sorry, my phone interrupted me. Anyway, so what I was going to say was I found this very interesting to do because putting the sort of very dense verbal symbolism into a picture was a really interesting exercise.
Yeah. What I'm interested in is the center figure has Mjolnir in his hand.
Oh, yeah. That is actually in the... That's in the text.
I haven't read it. So, I mean, I know I'm familiar with it. I just haven't read it, but it was not where I expected to see Thor's hammer, but hey, that's cool.
Do you know what? I remember being surprised by that too. But then again, the Thor's hammer does have like a Golden Dawn connection. Cause it's also like it's connected with the like the whirling of creation and like, so the Golden Dawn mentions it as well, even if almost. Okay. So it is kind of in there.
Fascinating. I'm gonna have to go back and read it, obviously.
Yeah, I haven't read it myself, so yeah, we'll have to track it down. And if I remember, I'll hyperlink it.
Because okay. I love the story of Mjolnir's creation in the Norse myth. It's actually a somewhat amusing story involving Loki and Thor's wife, and it gets all very interesting. Thor and Loki are the very definition of frenemies, as far as I'm concerned. but yeah, I'm gonna have to check this out.
Okay, so moving on, we have the Sri Yantra meditation diagram.
That is gorgeous. I love that.
Thank you. So that was also commissioned. And that was actually commissioned for an interesting purpose. Lainey, you know Joe Max and his etheric arts. Like, he makes the radionics machines.
Right.
So I painted that for him to put in a radionics machine for a customer.
Uh-huh.
And you can actually also link to his website, etherecarts.com, which I can also type in there, because it has a picture of this painting inside the radionics machine.
Curious. Very curious. Yeah, Joseph does some great stuff with radionics. Maybe we'll get him on the show sometime.
You should get him on the show.
Yeah.
He's a really good, he's a Leo. He's good at this. Not like me.
Yeah, he's very good at this sort of thing. but now this is really quite exquisite, first of all. And of course, his machines are incredibly exquisite. So I would expect best of the best to be working together. But that's quite gorgeous.
Yeah. And this is also a little bit tangent back to the question of what can a person do artistically who's practicing esotericism. Even if you don't, like, even if you're practicing esotericism and you don't know how to draw, I think better than trying to do an amateur drawing is to do like an esoteric diagram, because anyone can do this, like with rulers and but I do think that drawing and painting geometry is especially something like this, because it's basically like a geometric representation of creation. Is a really, really good meditation. And it doesn't really require drawing skill. It really just needs like rulers and a lot of concentration.
And this would be, you mentioned the point of the commission, but as a meditation diagram, this is something that perhaps someone would buy a print of and sit in front of, in lotus position and
People buy. I sell it for that purpose, and people do buy it for that purpose, and it is a good diagram for that. Yeah. You could actually fall right into the center of that, and it works pretty well.
Exactly, even though it just also look great on a wall. So multi-purpose art. Yeah.
It's gorgeous. Yeah.
So moving on to, unfortunately, our last one for the evening. It would be great if we could look through every piece that you painted, but I'm sure that'd be torture for you after a while. We have Babylon.
Ah, what? This is another one of my favorites of yours. This one is quite something.
That's the other one, another complicated one you chose. So that one is also from Thelemic lore. And that was another commission. And, this one is even, this one is even harder to sort of try to give an elevator pitch about. I'm trying to think of a way to describe it in a way that does not involve like Kabbalistic symbolism that I would probably need to.
Did you have to explain the entire system of Kabbalah to go along with?
Yeah. I probably would. I can't think of a very simple way to explain it without that.
Did you, when you say this was a commission, did someone just say, I want a painting of Babylon? Or did they say, I want a painting of Babylon with blah, 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 blah?
No,
blah,
it
blah,
was
blah,
just
blah.
A painting of Babylon, but the with is implied because every single, like esoteric art, as esoteric art usually has, it's, you know, like a tarot card, every element in this painting symbolically corresponds with this goddess. Yeah. So implicit in the request there's already a whole catalog of symbolism,
right,
that belongs to this goddess. And a lot of it has to do with the number seven, which you can kind of guess probably by the heptagram, and there's seven roses, and there's also a heptagonal tiling on the floor. So a lot of this was about incorporating the number seven in multiple ways.
And if you want to talk about some of the Kabbalistic symbolism, you can, and those in the know will know what you're talking about, and those who don't can work on their Google skills.
So basically, she corresponds with Bina, and the symbolism relates to crossing the abyss.
Yeah, very, very, extremely cool. So those out there who know exactly what that means will love this piece even more, and those who don't also love this piece, and then they've got a bunch of Googling and a bunch of fic books to read.
Oh man, I'm sorry. I wish I could think of like a good quick.
No, it's there's okay. No way. There's no elevator speech for Kabbalah. It's like the more, and I've also read now thousands of pages of Kabbalah, and every time I pick it up, I understand less. So,
I think that's the point, Molly.
Yeah,
I think that's a feature, not a bug.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, well, I think we're going to start to flow into our wrap-up. That was amazing, Kat.
Yes,
Leo or not,
you.
I don't know what your sign was, but you killed it. So that was a really awesome interview.
I didn't think I could. I'm like an introvert, and I never talk about this stuff, so I didn't think.
It was great, and it's fantastic art. And now the great thing about your art is people can actually buy prints of it. Is that correct?
They could. Yes, although a few of them are out of stock, and I need to bring them back in stock. So if they want to buy one and it's out of stock, it'll be there soon.
Yeah,
I have an Etsy shop. There's an Etsy shop that is linked from my website.
Yeah, and your website. There we go. We have it on the page. And for those who are for some reason listening, it's simply katluneau.com. So people, they can go there. They can see your art. They can find out more about you. They can see all your links. As you said, the link to your Etsy shop is there, where they can buy prints. They can also contact you for commissions, right?
Yeah, they could do that.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
And if you are listening, keep in mind that Kat is spelled with a K, K A T, and Luneau is LUNOE.com.
Yeah. So head there, commission some art, buy some art. You know, there's probably going to be another lockdown. You want to spruce up your apartment or your house. You know, well, you want some beautiful art for your bunker. So this is the place to get it. Now, before we wrap up, I always have to end, and I really should start because I know people have already turned off the YouTube or the podcast. But we do use a very extremely awesome studio out of Chicago named 99 Perspectives with an awesome producer, and it's a service that is worth every penny. But we do have to throw them a few shekels, and just to break even on the show, we do ask for some Patreon support. So if you go to patreon.com/gnostic for a little as a dollar per piece of media per month, you can help spread the light of Gnosis, help us with what we're doing, help us break even. Right now, we are trying to think of some more things to give our wonderful patrons, but you do get all of the shows early. You get them up to a week early, and pretty soon, we haven't been doing this as much lately, but not only can you get the shows early, but you can actually watch them live, and through YouTube chat, you can interact with us and the guests. You can ask questions. You can have your voice heard. So we really hope that if you are able to, please head to Patreon and throw us a few bucks. Now, as somebody who has a permanently negative bank account, as a poor writer, I do understand particularly particularly with what's going on in the world, that even a couple extra bucks per month can be a pretty big hardship. So if you do like what we're doing, you'd like the show today, please like and subscribe. Please share it. And if you don't want to share it on your social media for whatever reason, you're a closet esotericist, then email it to a friend that you think would like it as much as you did. Yeah. So I think we're on that note. Thanks again, Kat. And I'm signing off. Bishop.
Thank you. Take care. It's great to see you, Kat, of course. And Jonathan, it is always a pleasure. And always special pleasure. Thanks to our producer, Jerome, is behind the scenes, but he does a crackerjack job and we really appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay. Good night, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.